The Department of Health and Human Services is denying a report from the Washington Post that the Trump administration prohibited health officials from using seven words in budgetary documents. The list of forbidden words, which reportedly applied to several HHS divisions, includes fetus, transgender, diversity, evidence-based, and science-based. HHS said the report was a mischaracterization. Whatever the case, the tactical use or avoidance of words has a long history in America. And for a look back, we're joined by Ed Ayers and Brian Ballow, historians and co-hosts of the weekly podcast Backstory. Guys, welcome back.
Hey
Jeremy.
And we're not really talking about banned words here. Explain.
We're talking about words that people avoid for strategic reasons. And I'm afraid it goes back even older than the country.
Well, it certainly goes back to the Constitution, which many people have noted doesn't have the word slavery in it. Why don't we see the word slavery there?
Well, do you like having a United States?
Yes, I do.
Well, that's why we don't have the word slavery there, because they were so divided between the pro-slavery and non-slavery that they knew that if they introduced that word into the Constitution, it could destroy the whole country.
So what did they do then?
Well, they came up with some great euphemisms. Here's my favorite. Such persons as the several states now existing shall think proper to admit. And this is not just an accidental or marginal maneuver. This is the three-fifths clause, where the foundations of the American political system and legal system are based on recognizing enslaved people as three-fifths of a person. And it's not as if people at the time didn't know what they were doing. Here's one delegate from Maryland points out that, quote, "The delegates anxiously sought to avoid the admission of expressions which might be odious in the ears of Americans, although they were willing to admit into their system those things which the expression signified." Now, there's a great circumlocution. They're willing to do things, just not talk about it. And they said, you know, later generations are going to point out the fact that just omitting this word does not mean that we really grappled with the meaning of slavery. So it came back and haunted the United States until slavery was no longer with us.
All right. Well, here's another example I want to get to, which is about something we've been talking a lot about, which is taxes in recent days. And the term progressive tax, Brian.
Yeah, that refers to progressivity in the tax. And what that means is that people who have a greater ability to pay, pay a higher percentage of their income. It's called a graduated income tax. The income tax was passed as a constitutional amendment in 1913. And advocates for that income tax said, look, people who have benefited the most from our political economy should pay at a higher percentage than people who are just eking out a weekly wage. And that is progressivity in taxation.
And the words matter in the debate?
The words matter tremendously, Jeremy, because those who advocated for this connected progressivity with other phrases like social justice, like egalitarian system.
Yeah, Brian, but I don't hear the Republicans talking about the progressive tax system. They use different language to explain what this is doing, right?
You're very alert, Ed. The language they use now is fairness. And in fact, there have even been proposals for the fair tax, which is often equated with a flat tax. Charge everybody the same percentage, regardless of what they make.
What about the words communism and socialism? They have a lot of meaning today, but how did they get used in American politics in the past?
Well, communism had been a word throughout the 19th century, lots of communal experiments. And communism, associated with the Bolsheviks, as we came to think of it later, changed the meaning. But for a long time, as with progressive, communism was actually a benign word.
And especially during the 1930s, millions of Americans, they were intrigued by that notion. That all came to a screeching halt after World War II, with the rise of the Cold War, with the anti-communist campaign of Senator Joe McCarthy, where communist became a word that you simply couldn't use in polite company except to tar somebody with that label.
So what do you make of the fact that in 2016 we had a candidate for president who did very well, Bernie Sanders, who ran as a Democratic socialist?
I think the conditions that led many Americans to wonder whether the country was becoming too unequal in the way income was distributed that existed very much at the end of the 19th century, we're about at that same level of income inequality today. And I think it opens the door for very open use of words and concepts that, in essence, try to call a spade a spade. To go back to what Ed was saying about slavery, by the time we get to the abolitionists, they are just aching to talk about slavery. In fact, Congress kind of has to prevent them. Aren't I right about that, Ed?
Yeah, well, there's 2 million people signing petitions to Congress to abolish slavery. And Congress freaks out because they don't want to talk about it at all. So they create something called the gag rule, which basically means we're going to table this before anybody ever has a chance to talk about it. And so every year between 1836 and 1840, they had to come up with some new provision to stop anybody from even saying the word slavery.
Hmm. Well, let's talk about something a little more recent. In the 1960s, the idea of affirmative action was introduced as a way to combat racial discrimination in the hiring process. Tell us about the history of the use of those words.
Affirmative action, as we understand it today, Jeremy, was actually begun by the Nixon administration, a Republican president, and it was used to address the state-sponsored discrimination against African Americans, first in employment and then later on in higher education. Affirmative action was challenged very vociferously in the courts starting in the 1970s and 1980s, and then in Congress and politically by the 1980s and 1990s. And what advocates, many advocates of affirmative action did with that word was they retreated a little bit in order to fight another battle. They began to talk about diversity. They began to talk about the positive values associated with hanging out with people from all different races, different genders, different nationalities. And today, you find diversity being used much more than affirmative action. Here's the irony. Guess what one of the banned words is in the article you
right,
cited
diversity.
At the beginning? It is diversity. So in many ways, the uses of these words really come full circle, and they're very subject to political use, political manipulation, and use as wedge issues.
Ed, let me just finally go back to you and ask what you think the fact that we have all these words in American history that are so sensitive and that help swing a debate one way or the other, what does that say about this country?
Well, it says that words matter and that things are remarkably plastic and pliable, that things are contested. When you have even words that are describing things that everybody knows exist, but suddenly we don't say them, it suggests that whoever can control public opinion controls the nation. And people realize if you don't have the words to talk about something, you really can't advocate for it and in some ways deny it. So I think it's not surprising that the struggle over language is one of the struggles. And we see how quickly it made it to the front page, right? Here's a conversation among some agency, and suddenly everybody is alert to the meaning of language. So it's constantly shifting around us all the time, and it's constantly contested.
That's Ed Ayers and Brian Ballow, historians and co-hosts of the weekly podcast Backstory. Guys, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.